Welcome to another episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast with your hosts, Sean Sorrentino and Aaron Paulette.
Welcome to episode 172 of Gunblog Variety Cast Radio, a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. How are you doing, Aaron?
The cinnamon-scented event horizon is upon us, Sean.
The cinnamon-scented event horizon was taking over sometime in October, Aaron.
Well, that's true, but we have crossed the event horizon. We cannot escape. We are in the singularity now. Our only chance is just to ride it through and hope we can make it to the other side.
Well, I am not having too much of a trouble with that. I went to the mall. I think it was Monday.
I am so sorry.
No, actually, it wasn't bad. I had an appointment to get my eyes checked and then to buy new glasses on Monday. And I went into the mall. It was deliberately done Monday morning, 10:30. The mall opens at 10. And I'm like, look left, look right. I go into the mall. Hint, hint, the mall I went to, the Belk doesn't post. And there's no signs between you and the mall, just in case you care. I go into the mall. I go into the Lens Crafters, the doctor next door. I get my eyes checked. I go and I buy my glasses. I'm like, well, you know, I'm in the mall. I'm rarely in malls. I may as well just go walk around, right?
Right.
And I walked around the mall and there was no Christmas music playing. There was no line at Santa. I really should have stopped and got myself a Santa picture. I've wanted to do this for a long time and get a Santa picture and like post it on Facebook. Here's my Santa picture. But I didn't, you know. I suppose Santa probably wouldn't be worried about it. The dude was sitting there on his cell phone. Well, he was playing. He was like on Facebook or something. I don't know. And I walked into a store, and because my wife is here and she might hear what it is, I won't tell anybody what I got. But I saw what I thought was the perfect kind of silly gift. It's not, you know, a real Christmas gift, but it was something I was like, you know, I think she'd like this. So I bought that, and no Christmas music in the mall itself. In some of the stores, they were playing Christmassy type music, but not in the mall itself. And I didn't feel like I was being attacked by Christmas. One thing I did think was, is that if this is a mall in a major metropolitan area and it has this many open stores in it, retail is in a bad way. So yeah, that's not good. But I wasn't abused by the Christmas spirit, and I thought that was pretty nice.
Wow, I may need to go live where you live. Yeah, for about the past week, we've been putting up Christmas decorations. Normally, we try to get it all done on Black Friday, but it rained for a good chunk of Thanksgiving and most of Black Friday, so that put a damper on things. We decorated indoors, but yeah, we've been playing catch-up ever since, and I've just been up on the roof a whole bunch of times, so yeah, I've been doing all that and fighting off headaches. So I don't really have anything all that exciting to report, although we mentioned it last week, and they were supposed to have it out on Monday, and they didn't. But my episode of Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns dropped yesterday, and it is nearly 2 glorious hours of me geeking out about Dungeons & Dragons / Pathfinder. I get so wrapped up that someone starts to interrupt me, and I basically go, no, shush, Mama's talking. So yeah, it's 2 hours, and things get really crazy, and I make all sorts of inappropriate comments because it's not a family-friendly show. So, you know, I wouldn't really listen with young ears in the room, but, you know, if you are a mature audience, go ahead and listen to it, and I think you'll have a good time.
Now, I want to go back to something. You've been overcome with Christmas, but did you actually leave your house at any point? I mean, not just to go outside and go on the roof. I mean, like, go to the mall, go to a store?
No.
Okay, so then how can you have been overrun by Christmas? Have you been watching TV with lots of commercials?
No. Because Mom is one of those people for whom Christmas is a full contact blood sport. And when it is Christmas time, it is Christmas time, and the music comes out, and the baking ensues, and the decorations are everywhere, and it looks like the Christmas spirit just vomited on the inside of the house.
Okay, so you're not really complaining about society. You're complaining about your mom.
Well, I'm complaining about both, let's be fair, because, you know, I see it everywhere else, too. Now, I will grant them this. because it is now after Thanksgiving, they're permitted in my worldview. I mean, I personally think that there should not be any Christmas decorations or commercials until Thanksgiving. The Macy's Day Thanksgiving Parade officially kicks off Christmas. So once you see Santa at the end of the parade, it is now Christmas. You can begin decorating and advertising. But even though former co-host Adam says that all laws inevitably end in puppy-killing SWAT teams, and so you should keep that in mind every time you think there ought to be a law, I still firmly believe there ought to be a law against early advertising of Christmas. And I just can't escape it.
If I ever end up as Emperor of the Universe, if you put up Christmas decorations before December 13th, you get your choice, crucifixion or impalement. That's the way it's going to be.
So are we talking like Vlad the Impaler style impalement? And could it possibly be on a Christmas tree?
No, it will be on a pole. But If you want to put a little angel on their head, fine, I don't care. I thought this out very carefully. I don't want my executioners to have to be real hands-on. You don't want them to have to hold them down and chop their heads off or anything like that. That's gross. And that, I mean, that leads to PTSD and stuff.
Well, there's also the repetitive stress injury, you know?
Yeah.
Don't want them to get rotator cuff
exactly.
problems.
But if you just put them up on the pole, pull them down enough so they're not coming off and then walk away, how much stress can that be? No Christmas before it's time. And December 13th is the day. December 12th is going to be Emperor's parents' anniversary. And December 13th, knock yourself out with Christmas. Before that, you get your choice. Free choice. Do you want to be crucified or do you want to be impaled? Because I plan on being a merciful dictator. But it's pretty easy around here to avoid Christmas because we don't put up decorations. We go to my mother-in-law's house, which is Christmas. Like every bit as Christmas as your mom's. We don't have commercial TV. I don't listen to commercial radio. I can't remember the last time I was in a mall when I wasn't there because my job required me to be there. This last Monday getting my eyeglasses. And honestly, I don't know if I've been in a mall since last year.
Nice.
Yeah, so I don't have to put up with it. It's pretty nice. You want to get away from Christmas? Don't watch TV.
Well, I don't watch TV, but my family does.
Now, did you see that thing on the Hallmark Channel, How to Survive Hallmark Movies? Or How to Die in Style. That was awesome.
Oh my God. Yeah. See, mom loves the Hallmark Christmas movies, and that rang so true. One of the things I shared is that I survive the movies by rewriting them into episodes of My Little Pony, and it works surprisingly well. You know, so you listen to the plot and you go, okay, so clearly, this woman here, her cutie mark, her special talent is in finding the perfect present for people. She is the perfect present pony. And the reason she can't find the perfect present for the romantic male lead is because she has yet to realize that she is his perfect present. And so we've got to have some hijinks, Pinkie Pie style, where she tries various presents and they don't work before she finally realizes that he is actually her special some pony. And then they get together, and that way their romance, you know, culminates during Hearthswarming Eve. I know that doesn't make sense to the 99% of viewers who listen, but if you are into ponies, trust me, it makes sense. And it really does make listening to these movies rather humorous.
Well, there is actually a Facebook drinking game now for these Hallmark movies. And oh my goodness, oh my God. You would be dead by the end of the first reel.
Yeah, it's pretty lethal.
So speaking of watching TV, I finished watching all of season 2 of Silver Spoon.
Season 2, wait, hang on. I thought you were going to finish season 1 and then watch something called Godless and then go to season 2. What happened?
Well, I watched the first episode of Godless with Michelle Dockery, and my wife liked it. So I have to watch it with her, so I can't binge watch it.
Oh.
So I went back to watching Silver Spoon. Pretty cool. Friend of the show Ernie reports that he's watched one episode and he's hooked already. So check it out. Silver Spoon, it's on Netflix.
Is Godless also on Netflix?
It is. Yeah, I think it's a Netflix original. So Netflix wrote it themselves. And it's pretty good. The first episode was pretty nice. I'm looking forward to seeing the second episode eventually. Yeah, we've watched other things together. So quick reminder, search for GBVC Radio on Facebook and join our group.
Thanks to Lucky Gunner and Remington for their support of Gunblog Variety Cast Radio. From Golden Saber to Range Rounds, get a full lineup of quality Remington ammo that ships fast at LuckyGunner.com.
All right, let's get on with the show.
Beth has never done yoga because she's not flexible, but that's the whole point of yoga. Similarly, some people don't get involved with firearms training because they aren't proficient with firearms. Beth explains how that's the whole point of firearms training.
So I have a friend who offers yoga classes locally, and I've been thinking about it. In fact, I've probably been thinking about it for the last 8 years or so. The thing is, I'm just not very flexible. And I realize that the point of yoga is hopefully to gain more of that flexibility, but I guess in some ways I just feel like kind of the big dork who doesn't have the right clothes. Well, I do have the yoga pants that have never set foot in a yoga studio. Who doesn't have the right equipment, whatever it is you actually need to do yoga. And maybe it's just I don't have the right mentality. I've got this mental block like I can't do it. I even have different yoga options on our We Fit, and I've tried those in the past, but I'm just not very good at it. It got me to think about yoga, my lack of flexibility, and why people don't get started with firearms. Okay, so I know that sounds a little bit weird to somehow put yoga and firearms together, but honestly, I think yoga training could be a really good thing for people to get involved with along with firearms training, but that's not exactly my point. You see, kind of like I stated earlier, I've always been a silent observer of yoga, a curious spectator on the sidelines, wishing maybe I could be that calm, that focused, and that flexible, and wondering if my body would ever really allow itself to be crammed and contorted into those various poses. It looks like such a great skill and a great activity to do alone or enjoy with others or even try with the kids. But as many beginners would probably say right along with me, I am just not very flexible. But again, isn't that the point of yoga training? To become more flexible? To work surely and steadily until your mind and body actually comply and cooperate? And you can not only get into, but also hold those poses as you build strength, stability, and confidence? I can't imagine that anyone starts out with yoga automatically being able to master the feathered peacock or the handstand scorpion pose. Those challenging advanced skills take practice. I'm really more along the lines of the corpse pose right now, but I do realize that some time and some dedication would probably put me on the right path. And the whole thing that hit me is that the same attitude is exactly what keeps people from getting involved with firearms training. People really want to try shooting, but will claim, I just don't have any experience. But that's why you get started, to gain that experience. No one starts out at 100%. It's a process. And you can work surely and steadily until your mind and body actually comply and cooperate. And you can not only fire those shots, but also get bullseyes as you build strength, stability, and confidence. I bet you see where I'm going here. You know, you can believe me that beginners aren't automatically drawing from a holster while moving and shooting and engaging multiple targets. But the I haven't tried it or the I am not good at shooting excuses are just not acceptable. Those are the kinds of mental blocks that keep people from getting started in the first place. Just like me with yoga. Okay, so I know that I'm not very flexible. I never have been. Even as a young child doing the presidential fitness test or whatever that thing was, I was always at the bottom of the bunch. I like to blame it on my legs since they're super long, giving me my 6 foot tall stature. But the thing is, I get it. I know that giving yoga a try will help me change my lack of flexibility. The good thing is, yoga isn't just about being flexible. It's about becoming flexible. And similarly, firearms training isn't about being a proficient shooter. It's about becoming a proficient shooter. So for all of those silent observers out there, don't be intimidated to try out a class, whether yoga or firearms, I suppose. The yoga room and the shooting range should be judgment-free zones. And while you may not be able to perfect that headstand or get that zero down score quite yet, we all need to start somewhere. As one of my all-time favorite Mark Twain quotes says, "The secret to getting ahead is getting started." With that thought in mind, I do have some really good firearms training on my calendar coming up, but that yoga spot is still missing. Who knows? I might dig out the We Fit once again and give it a try. Maybe the kids and I can have a good laugh. Or perhaps one day, I'll contact that friend of mine and step into my very first class for the first time. Until next time, stay safe and be well armed.
You can read more from Beth at usconcealedcarry.com/blog and click on Pacifiers and Peacemakers in the left sidebar.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the donate or the subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly, and a little help from you is a big help to us.
Felons behaving badly. Robbery suspect beaten with bat by Raleigh store clerk.
Oh, this is gonna be good.
Dateline, Raleigh, North Carolina. A suspected robber was beaten with a baseball bat by the store clerk who he robbed Tuesday morning at a convenience store in Raleigh, police said. Police responded to the scene of the robbery and beating at the Circle K.
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
Located at 2506 South Saunders Street.
Stop by and say hi.
Around 12:25 a.m. Upon arrival, officers found the clerk standing above the suspect and holding a baseball bat. The clerk told CBS North Carolina that the suspect, identified as Suspect 51 of Raleigh, said he had a gun and demanded money. After the clerk gave him cash, the clerk chased him down with a bat. Police said the clerk was on the phone with 911 during and after the robbery. CBS North Carolina's A.J. Genevieve was on scene shortly after police arrived and reported that when he got to the scene, there was a baseball bat on the ground, as well as blood and about $60 in cash. There were approximately 10 Raleigh police officers at the scene. Suspect was arrested at the scene and transported to Wake Med with non-life-threatening injuries. Suspect is charged with common law robbery. He is being held in Wake County Detention Center under $50,000 secured bond. According to an arrest warrant, suspect took Newport cigarettes and $70.42 in the robbery. The clerk was not injured, but told CBS North Carolina they're still shaken up.
I saw the embedded video of this report. It was unintentionally hilarious to me because in the report, you have pictures of one of the police officers holding the bat. He's just got this expression of amusement on his face as he just kind of twirls the bat. And then there's a close-up of the bat, and I gotta tell you, that bat has seen better days. I don't know what it was used for before, or if just the clerk beating the heck out of the guy was what damaged it. But this thing has dents and divots, and it looks like the handle is at an angle, and there's, like, duct tape wrapped around the grip. This is definitely an ugly stick, and she beat him, and apparently, after... I don't know if like the bat flew out of her hand or whatever, but apparently that wasn't good enough, and she beat him with her fists too.
Well, here's the problem. The beating occurred outside of the convenience store, so she chased the dude down.
This is one of those differences between what is legal and what is wrong. Yes, chasing him down and beating him, especially over $70 in cigarettes, is not exactly legal. On the other hand, dude had it coming.
He did. Where are you going to find 12 people in this state who are going to convict this woman for beating dude who'd robbed the place before? They literally found out that this guy had robbed the place previously.
Yeah. So that is a perfect segue. In addition to robbing the store before, what else is on this person's permanent record?
Two counts, DWI, misdemeanor, non-class code. DWI level 1, aggravated, misdemeanor, non-class code. Failure to obey police, misdemeanor, pre-structured. Larceny over 200, aid and abet, misdemeanor, pre-structured. Miscellaneous motor vehicle violation, misdemeanor, pre-structured. Speeding, misdemeanor, pre-structured. Two counts, violate vehicle registration, misdemeanor, pre-structured. Possess Schedule 6, felon class I. Possess with intent to sell, Schedule 6, felon class I. Felony breaking and entering, felon class I. Two counts, common law robbery, felon class G. Robbery with a dangerous weapon attempted, felon class D. Four counts, robbery with a dangerous weapon, felon class D. And habitual felon, felon class C.
Yeah, so this guy is about as bad as you can get without getting into the really horrible things like murder, rape, and kidnapping.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got the feeling that regardless of who the clerk was, once they ran this guy's rap sheet, it was basically, thank you. Oh, dear.
So there is actually more to the story. Dateline, Raleigh, North Carolina. A clerk who beat an alleged armed robber with a baseball bat in Raleigh early Tuesday is now out of a job for violating company policy. Speaking exclusively with ABC 11 Tuesday, Harris, this is the clerk, Harris said she understands beating suspect was against company policy, but she stands by her actions. I feared for my life. He held my customers hostage and was pushing and harassing my customers. That was my thing. He could have come back and did it again. To me, I did what I had to do. I felt what I did was right, she said. Authorities said the suspect implied he had a gun during the robbery, but they did not find a weapon.
Again, this is one of those cases of I would not want to do what she did because I wouldn't want to risk it. But I am so very glad she did what she did, and I'm ecstatic that the police just said, nah, we're good.
Well, you wouldn't have done what she did, because when the guy implied that he had a weapon, you'd have drawn your weapon and shot him.
Well, yeah, there's that.
If you have anything to say about this, I guess you can probably contact Circle K and say, hey, that's not cool.
You know, I don't think this woman is going to have much difficulty getting a new job.
I don't think so either. Baron is on assignment. Talk is cheap, and talk without the skills and knowledge to back it up is even cheaper. Miguel is tired of the fake outrage at those who wouldn't help a woman and child shot by a gunman.
Hello, hiddens, and welcome to the Mental Flea Market. Today, we are going to talk short and sweet about fake outrage. I was checking local TV station's website about an article on the Rancho Tejano shooting and how the husband and father of some of the victims was outraged that nobody stopped to help. We all know the Kitty Genovese syndrome, and if you don't, please go ahead and check the links. But what pissed me off was the reaction of the people in the comment section. I know, never read the comments, but you still do. These people were outraged. Oh, let me tell you. They were highly upset that nobody stopped to help. And even that one person in the middle of a melee gave having to go to work as an excuse. Actually, I am going to chuck that one to shock and not callousness. Most people are not mentally prepared to see carnage, and they will revert automatically to a safe mental processing to avoid dealing with the crap in front of them. What took the cake was everybody telling everybody else how they will step in and help. Basically, it was a big mental circle jerk. Something that unfortunately I know better for the simple reason that most people do not know nor have care to learn first aid. I step in the comments, you know, just could not let them ride high in their moral ponies without knocking them off. This was my reply. Wait, all of you are condemning those who do squat? How many of you know how to treat these kind of injuries? Other than calling 911 and going live on Facebook, what would you be good for? Let's face it, 99.999% of you would also do nothing. As I was expecting, most of the conversation went quiet after that. The few that I actually raised to argue went with a moral support shtick. You know, let me hold your hand. At least I can hold their hands. You know, they don't have to suffer alone. You're not doing shit. Okay, you're in the way. It pissed me off that I had to snark back and tell me, you know, paramedics, you know, use a lot of moral support to stop arterial bleeding. Idiots. I know this is the part of my segment when I'm supposed to give some constructive advice, but I have none. If by now you have not figured out you need to be training basic first aid and have a kit, there's nothing I can do for you. And why the hell are you even listening to this podcast? This is not a constructive segment today. I just want to unload on a particular thing that pissed me off and just ran crap on riding a high moral horse, but in reality, they don't know how to do shit. Some of them even went on to talk about making bandages out of clothing, like life was a movie and real life fabric tears easily like in an episode of some rescue show. Do you have any doubts? As usual, people's knowledge in this subject only comprises what they have seen on TV. Hell, I'm willing to bet these holier-than-thou idiots don't even carry a simple knife so they can cut clothing and procure some sort of bandages. But sure, they're gonna have the latest iPhone or whatever the other dumb brand is, and they're capturing the bloodshed with 16 megapixels of digital quality. If you find like this, embarrass them. The more public, the better. Either get them to shut up, or get them to learn how to treat the injuries and be useful to society, or at least themselves. That's it. Oh, and by the way, happy Thanksgiving.
Get more Miguel daily at gunfreezone.net.
Hey, this is Lloyd Bailey, the Armed Lutheran, host of the Armed Lutheran Radio Podcast, reminding you that the podcast you're listening to is a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. Check out all the great content at selfdefenseradio.net.
The main topic, concealed carry reciprocity. So Aaron, I got to spend a glorious afternoon yesterday listening to the House Judiciary Committee do their markup, they call it, of H.R. 38, which is the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Bill.
Well, I'm glad you were there and I'm glad you enjoyed it. I don't have a lot of patience for that sort of thing, so it's always nice that there are people who will do the job so that I don't have to.
Oh, trust me, it was frustrating. If you ever have any illusion that the people who run our country are smarter than the average bear, all you have to do is watch some C-SPAN. Some of it's, you know, just weird because they follow their little rules of order. Every time somebody, you know, rings in, he wants to talk, he says he wants to strike the last word, which seems kind of a weird thing to say, but, you know, it's just the way it works. You know, that's what they say. That stuff you can just get over. It's a weird foreign language. The problem is you listen to some of the things that they say and you just want to throttle them. There is a tree out there that is making oxygen that you just wasted. Go and apologize.
Yeah, there are some of them who are just window lickers.
Oh my goodness.
Like the gentleman who thought that the island of Guam would tip over and sink if it had too many people on it.
Too many Marines. Not just people, if we sent a bunch of Marines there. Well, see, he was there. He mostly didn't say a lot, thank goodness. But when he did say stuff, it wasn't any smarter, let me tell you.
Oh, dear.
And then there was Sheila Jackson Lee, the gift that keeps on giving. Sheila Jackson Lee literally told people, well, you know what? I'm just going to let you listen to it.
Just a few hours ago, I introduced legislation preventing someone who had domestic violence conviction and indicate that if it's a domestic violence situation, you have a gun, it's a 500% chance it'll end in homicide.
A 500% chance that if you have a gun, it will end in homicide.
You know, I think the only way to make sense of that is to assume that if there's a domestic disturbance, that gun is going to kill five people. That's the only way that makes any sort of sense.
Literally has to be the same person five times. Now, what she is attempting to say is that if there is a domestic violence situation and somebody uses a firearm during the course of that domestic violence situation, the chance that somebody will die increases five times. And see, right. That makes sense. Because if you reach for a gun, you probably aren't looking to tickle them. This is like if you use a gun in suicide, it's more likely you'll end up dead. Well, no kidding, because if you reach for a gun to commit a suicide, you're pretty serious. You're not just calling for help here. So, yeah, great. In any case, this is the kind of stupid stuff. And she's reading this. You watch her, and she's reading from her cards. Like, who wrote that? In any case, it was interesting listening to this. It was the markup session, so basically the bill came to the Judiciary Committee, and the House Judiciary Committee would then amended the bill to what they wanted it to be, and then we're going to vote up or down to send it on to the House so that the House could vote for it. I was pretty impressed with the Republicans on the committee because every single amendment from the Democrat side was, well, let's make it not the people who have done these types of misdemeanors. Because if they had a felony, well, they weren't going to get a concealed handgun permit to begin with. So all of these were misdemeanors. Oh, if somebody has a domestic violence misdemeanor, that was the one that Sheila Jackson Lee introduced. Now, Aaron, you know the problem with introducing, well, if you have a domestic violence misdemeanor, then, you know, your concealed handgun permit reciprocity is not valid under this law. What's the problem there?
There's already something that does this. It's called the Lautenberg Amendment.
Well, what does the Lautenberg Amendment do if you have a domestic violence misdemeanor conviction?
I believe that it forbids you from owning any firearm ever.
You can't so much as get your hands on a gun, much less carry it concealed. But no, Sheila Jackson Lee wanted to make sure that she put in a bill that said if you had domestic violence misdemeanor, you can't take advantage of this concealed handgun permit reciprocity. You're already in violation of the federal law for touching a gun. So this is the level of intelligence we're dealing with here. There were, well, you know, if you have resisted a police officer, this is a misdemeanor. then you can't have a concealed handgun permit. If your state lets you have one, well, that's your state, but you can't go to another state with it. If you have abused an animal and it's a misdemeanor, well, then you're more likely to go on to hurt other people, because people who hurt people usually start out hurting animals because, you know, that's the way they are. And all of this sounds great, except they're all misdemeanors. And I was really impressed that each time somebody brought up yet one more thing to make it a patchwork of weird laws that nobody understands, let's make this more complicated, let's annoy everybody, every single time somebody on the other side said, look, this is all great, I'm sure you're a nice person, I'm sure you mean well, it's not a felony. If it was a felony, well, they'd be prohibited. If it's not a felony, we're not going to take their civil rights away. And it was, you know, over and over and over and over again. So brace yourself. We should be expecting, oh, look at all these bad people. They voted against laws to prevent people who've done all these horrible things. And PETA is going to come out and say what a horrible bunch of people they are because they didn't ban guns for people who have abused an animal.
PETA, who has a provable track record of killing animals rather than rehoming them. Yeah. Yeah, they can go auto fornicate with a sharp object.
Tell us how you really feel, Aaron.
They need to get cancer of the AIDS, of the gonorrhea, of the rectum.
Okay.
Moving on.
I think it might be interesting at this point to talk about, because you know what? Listening to people yammer on about dumb things that they're trying to do to kill the bill and then pontificate. That was the best part. They would pontificate for a while about how the bill was horrible and how they can make it just slightly less horrible. So maybe not instantly fatal, only fatal after about 20 minutes, if they were to just do this one little tiny reasonable amendment that was stupid because it wasn't a felony, you jerk. Over and over and over again. There's only so much we can talk about that. Nobody really wants to hear that crap. If you want to hear that crap, there's a video in the show notes. You can listen to it and maybe somebody make a drinking game out of it, because I'm not sure what else you could do with it. It was excruciating listening to some of these people talk. I think instead we should probably talk about some of the arguments that I've heard, and you've heard some of these arguments too, Aaron, about why we shouldn't, you know, this isn't the best idea. We shouldn't have concealed handgun permit reciprocity, from people who are ostensibly pro-gun.
See, how about this will open the door to federal regulation of concealed carry, and the Democrats will use this as an opportunity to meddle.
I don't quite understand that. We've got a situation where the federal government is saying, if you issue a concealed handgun permit and people are permitted to carry concealed in your state, which is all 50 morons, then you have to accept that somebody's home state permit, or indeed any other permit from any other state, is valid in your state. And they have to carry in exactly the same way, following the exact same rules that the people who live in your state carry, with the exception of whatever gun is legal in their home state that they're carrying in their home state, whatever magazine is legal in their home state, whatever ammunition they're carrying in their home state, totally legal in your state. So you can't arrest them because they didn't follow the New York Safe Act or something stupid like that. How does saying this open the door to the feds one day deciding, okay, well, then we're going to set the rules for why you get a concealed handgun permit? If you don't have a demonstrable need, like, say, California requires or Maryland requires.
Well, they probably think that this will ultimately end up with a federal standard for concealed carry.
Except it's very specifically written not to do that, number one. And number two, there's no valid reason for the federal government to do that. But the most important reason, right? You know, we can argue, well, they'll try. Okay, if they thought they could get away with it, do you think that the people who are anti-gun wouldn't try? Just because we haven't done anything to start the ball rolling? Are you kidding me? If anti-gunners thought they could pass a law at the federal level that said you have to have a federal concealed handgun permit, the federal concealed handgun permit can only go to people who have a justifiable need beyond normal human beings and have to have 77 hours of training and pass this impossible shooting test. And if they thought they could get away with that, they would have done that already. So I think it's a silly argument to say, if we do anything on the federal level, then the other side will realize they can use the federal government to take away our rights.
Okay, but they're arguing that it's the Commerce Clause. Really, shouldn't we be arguing this on the basis of the 14th Amendment?
Here's the question. Just because something says in the law, guns have moved in interstate trade, so that gives us the right to regulate them, that doesn't limit people's ability to argue in front of the Supreme Court or any other court that the 14th Amendment applies and Congress has the power to legislate in order to prevent the states from taking away your civil rights. Just because it says moved in interstate trade, like every other thing the federal government says, doesn't mean they can't argue something else. I mean, do you people not know lawyers? That's what I don't understand. The people who are making these arguments, they have to know a lawyer. They have to have even seen one on TV. Lawyers will argue, my client didn't do it. My client wasn't there. My client was there, but he didn't touch it. Okay, yeah, he touched it, but you know, he wasn't the cause of the problem. They will make all of these arguments simultaneously. And you're telling me that the lawyers who have to defend this bill won't make every one of these arguments? We're having a constitutional debating society on this. Like, oh, well, we can't do anything good unless we do it exactly in the right way. And we have already told everybody that this is the right way. So we won't do anything other than that. If you get into a fight with somebody, right? And the written rule said you can only punch each other. You can't hit each other with sticks. Dude picks up a bat and wails on you. What are you going to do? Are you going to keep punching him and say, stop hitting me with the bat? Or are you going to pick up a bat and beat the crap out of him with it? Any stool in a bar fight. You use whatever you have. And you know what? Here's the best part. Do you know what happens if the Supreme Court says, all right, fine. Yeah, it's interstate commerce, but interstate commerce doesn't let you regulate everything, which would probably be the first time in history they ever said anything like that. If they said that, you know what else is based entirely on the government's ability, the federal government's ability to regulate interstate trade? The Gun Control Act of 1968.
Yeah, isn't that specifically the part where you can't buy a gun from out of state?
Well, that's the reason that GCA 68 doesn't apply to me selling my handgun to somebody who lives in the same state as me. The only time it matters under GCA 68 is if the gun crosses a state line. And in order to get to the person who's selling it to me, he has to have a federal firearms license because only the FFL can receive a firearm from out of state. That's why the laws are written in that way. Go ahead, Supreme Court. Go ahead and say, oh, enough of this Commerce Clause overreach. That's another victory. Well, we won't get concealed handgun permit reciprocity on this, but oh my goodness, all the other stuff that would get yanked out, that would be glorious. Please, I dare you.
Well, what about the full faith and credit clause in, is it in the Constitution or is it in an article?
I'm not really sure. I believe it's in the Constitution. But as far as I understand it, and this is where the actual lawyers cringe and say, no, Sean, you don't know what you're talking about. But as far as I understand it, the full faith and credit clause really applies to contracts. So if I have a contract with somebody, he can't just go out of state and that state says, well, you know, that was in another state. We're not going to honor that. The laws of one state, the way you've developed something in one state, it is valid in another because they have to pay attention to each other's laws. They can't just say, well, that was in another state, screw you. Driver's licenses, everybody likes to bring this up with driver's licenses. Well, full faith and credit, that's not how driver's licenses work. Driver's licenses are valid in every other state because every state has entered into a compact with each other to say that we'll agree to view your licenses as valid if you agree to view ours as valid, right? It was a state-to-state agreement. It had nothing to do with the feds. And I think the feds could enforce that by saying, well, if you don't, we're going to take away, you know, federal money that we could give you, but we're not.
Yeah.
But it really isn't, we have to because of the full faith and credit law. They just agreed to. And if we could get every state to say, well, we agree to honor concealed handgun permits in every state, well, then we wouldn't have this problem. Now, personally, I would say, we live in North Carolina. If you're not one of the 37 states that agrees that our permit is valid in your state, well, then your driver's license aren't valid in our state. And if we see one of your car licenses, we're going to pull that guy over and give him a ticket for not having a valid license.
So even if all of this passes, Sean, surely the anti-gun forces will sue to overturn it and try and get it repealed.
Well, of course they will, number one. And two, don't call me Shirley. Here's the thing. Every law that gets overturned, every stupid gun law that we have to overturn, we're having to pay the money for it. The states aren't giving us this money. You know, we can't get the state of North Carolina or the state of Florida to sue some other state for not, that doesn't work that way. So we're paying money so that Alan Gura can go out and sue the city of Chicago for the umpteenth time. And hopefully he gets his money back when the feds tell the city of Chicago to give him the money. But all of that is footed by us. That's why it's so important to be giving money to the Second Amendment Foundation and for the NRA to be doing what they're doing. All of this money comes out of our pockets. So let's imagine for a second that this passes, and there's no reason to believe that it won't. We know that the state of New Jersey, the state of Maryland, the state of California are all going to lose their ever-loving minds about this, and they're going to sue in federal court to get it overturned. Well, now what? Now they have to pay to fight, and they're the ones fighting. There's like this inertia. When something happens, you have to put more effort into getting rid of it than we had to do to get it in the first place, right? That's why it's so hard to get rid of these gun control laws. So let them waste their money. Let them waste their time. If you played football, did you just stand on the 50-yard line and try to stop everybody who goes past you? Or do you like pick up the ball at some point and start running it down the field yourself? The best defense is a good offense. You know who said that?
Mel the cook on Alice.
There you go. Eeyore had a better attitude than some pro-gun people that I've seen. Oh, this will never happen. Oh, this person in the house is standing in front of it. They're not letting it through. We need to protest. Whoever was it? Rubio? I don't know. There was somebody that they were harassing because he wasn't moving it in the house. And here we are. It's in the house. It's moving forward. They got to just find every bad thing in the world. Oh, we're just living in the future. How do these people get out of bed in the morning if every single thing that could be good is actually bad secretly?
Well, what you're saying makes sense. No, I really don't know how some of these people can get along. And this is coming from me who frequently is depressed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, you've got to at least try, because if you don't try, you might as well just roll over and surrender.
We're going to move the ball down the field on this. This one, and what's the other bill? The one about the Share Act. That's what it was. The sporting hunting, something like that. The one that has the suppressors in it and a lot of other really good things.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get these passed. And then let the other side cry and complain and bitch and moan and just generally have a bad time because we've moved the ball down the field.
Tiffany is on assignment.
Cerakote is a polymer ceramic composite coating that can be applied to metals, plastics, polymers, and wood. It's also what will take your plain Jane firearm from basic to full custom. Whether you want a handgun coated in just a single color, your hunting rifle camouflaged for your specific environment, or your competition pistol sprayed in purple, white, and black Carolina Cryptic, you want Carolina Ceramic Coating to do the job. Bud and his team of skilled technicians will carefully disassemble and clean your firearm, professionally apply the Cerakote in your choice of colors and patterns, and return your firearm to you in perfect working order. And they also do auto engine parts. When I wanted my competition handgun Cerakoted, I trusted Carolina Ceramic Coating, and you should too. Check out their work on Instagram. Search at CerakoteNC, that's at CERAKOTENC, or go to CarolinaCeramicCoating.com.
And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Erin Paulette.
Come on, every pony! It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Erin Paulette!
If you've assembled a bug-out bag, you no doubt have run into situations where you wish you could compress items into smaller forms so that you could pack more of them into your bag. And if you've ever fallen while crossing a stream or gotten caught in a sudden downpour, you know how important it is to have dry clothes and how difficult it is to keep them that way when your bag is drenched. The same also goes for valuable electronic devices like cell phones, weather radios, and the like. Fortunately, there's a way to accomplish both of these tasks, and that's with a vacuum sealer. While you'd be hard-pressed to use one after the hits the fan due to their need for electricity, they're great for setting up long-term storage before a disaster, and they make your life easier in the meantime. Now, vacuum sealers are quite simple in operation. Take the item you want to seal and place it inside the smallest bag, which will fit it, leaving an inch between the end of the bag and whatever you put inside it. Most vacuum sealers come with pre-made bags with only one open end, but you can also make your own using rolls of plastic. More on that later. Place the open end of the bag into the sealer, close it, and press the activation button. The sealer will then suck all of the air out of the bag. When there is no more air to be sucked out, a heating element will fuse part of the top and bottom of the bag together, creating a seam. You now have a vacuum-sealed bag that is both watertight and airtight. The applications for a vacuum sealer are limited only by imagination and what you can fit inside the bags. Here are just a few uses. Foods like beans, rice, and dehydrated meals can be protected from spoilage and pests. Clothes are not only kept dry, but are compressed into a compact shape. I have a friend who sent me a set of surplus BDUs by vacuum sealing them so that they fit into a flat rate box. Protect things which would be damaged by water, like medicine, first aid supplies, electronics, or important documents. If you throw in some desiccant packets, the moisture absorbers, which are included in a lot of over-the-counter medicine and supplement bottles, you can waterproof ammunition and possibly even a handgun. And heck, you can also use it for its original purpose, vacuum sealing meat and fish so that it lasts longer and doesn't suffer freezer burn. I mentioned making your own bags with rolls of plastic, and while it involves a bit more effort, you have to measure out the bag, seal one end, then fill it and seal the other, it's actually more economical because not only do sheets of plastic cost much less than pre-made bags, you also have the ability to make custom-sized bags instead of being forced to use the ones made by the manufacturer. We're talking the difference between 100 feet of 8-inch tube plastic for $20 versus $20 for 44 bags. The one drawback to vacuum-sealed bags is that once you open them, they aren't air and watertight anymore, and this is fine for food items that you eat, but you might want a way to keep your clothes, electronics, and fire-starting tinder dry afterwards. The solution to that is simple. Include some Ziploc bags for small items and waterproof dry bags for larger items in your bug-out or get-home bags. I've included a link in the show notes to a good all-around vacuum sealer that has high ratings on Amazon and only costs $30. If you'd like to know more about vacuum sealers or want recommendations on different options, I suggest you read the two Blue Collar Prepping articles written by Chaplain Tim. They'll put you on the right path.
All through life, one must seek intellectual guidance on complicated issues. Who better to seek knowledge from than a puppet? Especially a puppet that's an anti-gun nut.
In This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery.
Okay, so you heard that introduction correctly. Today's audio fisk is coming from a puppet. So fisking this video kind of breaks one of my rules of political activism, which is not going after any old nut spouting things I disagree with. The modern internet has done away with many of the gatekeepers society once had. When I was a kid, for me to hear the political opinion on the media, it needed to be coming from a newspaper, the radio, or aired on network TV. These days with blogs, podcasts, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and many other media, anybody can just create an account and upload their opinion. Debating with any old crank you find on the internet can elevate them to your level, and elevating people who are against you isn't always the smartest idea. That's why with all my engagements, I attempt to stick with people who have power and are using it. So politicians who write and vote on laws, lobbyists who engage the politicians and often do the real law writing, law enforcement officers acting in their professional capacity, and judges, as they are the people who will be enforcing the law as well as interpreting it, and major news and media outlets. So I said all that to say that the Professor Puppet YouTube channel is not any of those things. It's a relatively small channel and seems to release new videos about as often as the Loaded Conversation podcast releases new episodes. But when friend of the show Roadkill sent me this, it was so well produced and used some of the most common anti-gun arguments that I thought it could be very useful. So while this is a fisk of Professor Puppet, really I've heard many of these arguments across the anti-gun board. Professor Puppet's format is a top 10 style.
So here are the top 5 reasons to buy an assault rifle.
So right from the word go, this video was made in response to the shooting in the Pulse nightclub in Florida. The gun used in that shooting was a Sig Sauer MCX carbine. So your standard modern sporting rifle, as our side would want to call it. The anti-gun side prefers to label them assault weapons for two reasons. One, assault brings a negative connotation to anything. Two, assault weapon sounds a lot like assault rifle. And an assault rifle is a military weapon capable of full-auto fire. When the federal assault weapons ban was written, the whole point was to get people to confuse these semi-auto rifles with military full-auto weapons. And Professor Puppet took the bait. If you find yourself talking to someone who misuses or interchanges these terms, it might be useful for you to make sure that they're aware that the two terms are very different. So on to reason number 5.
Number 5. To shoot at watermelons and other fun targets. Shooting guns is undeniably thrilling. The machinery is intricate and interesting, they look cool, and the very danger and gravity of using such a dangerous and deadly tool for sport has got to deliver some kind of atavistic charge to our adrenal glands.
Yep, shooting is fun. This is the number one reason why anti-gunners are losing ground at such a rapid rate. Anti-gunners bellyache about why Congress won't let them have their way and how big and powerful the NRA is. They obsess over gun death numbers, but never overall deaths, as those aren't useful to them. And they come out like ghouls whenever somebody gets shot. Meanwhile, we have gun shows and competitions and collecting and range time. Our side has fun. Their side has misery. Also, that adrenaline rush thing is real, but only for new shooters. Most non-shooters are quite surprised when they're told how relaxing a good range session is. Focus and controlled breathing, it's almost like meditation.
Number 4, you're a prop master for films. Even when assault weapons were banned from 1994 to 2004, movie prop masters were able to get special licenses for these blank firing guns used in film.
Okay, this one is just bizarre. You want to know what those special licenses are for movie prop houses? It's called an FFL. Consider that when some anti-pushing universal background checks wants to tell you how common gun dealers who could do the transfers are. Just because you have an FFL doesn't mean you're running a gun shop. Holster and other accessory makers, gun writers, gunsmiths, movie prop houses, and many other professions who handle a lot of guns choose to get their federal license. That's also why Hollywood seems to have all sorts of great full auto stuff, while us regular folk need to look at the super expensive pre-1986 NFA registered guns. Also, movie prop guns aren't always dedicated blank firing guns. Most are perfectly capable of firing standard ammo as well. Furthermore, assault weapons, note he used the term correctly here, weren't banned at all. Just from 1994 to 2004, dealers couldn't sell new assault weapons to private citizens. Manufacturers could sell them to dealers, and they can in turn sell them to police, military, and other exempted agencies. Hence why assault weapons ban magazines have that law enforcement and government use only stamp on them.
Though honestly, these days, you can get pretty much as good a results with plastic toy guns and digital effects.
Even his reasons aren't a reason. When it comes to film use of guns, non-gun people also don't understand how dumb some movie and TV looks to us. From the guy pointing a 1911 with a hammer down, to the sound of a Glock safety being flipped off, or to the hero firing his M16 from the hip full auto, there's a lot of things we see on film that we don't see in reality. When toy and prop guns are used, it gets really goofy. Hell, he supplied some sound effects from the YouTube channel Rocket Jump. Rocket Jump makes some great films. I really enjoy them, but their gun handling isn't fooling anybody.
Number 3, self-defense and home protection.
Here's the big one. All this other stuff is fun, but so is watching movies and playing video games. So is golf. It's very hard to justify anything that has negative effects when the only reason for it is because fun. But when something saves lives, that's a damn good reason to have something around.
Okay, if you live out in the tundra and you're in danger of being beset by evil biker gangs, zombie hordes, or hungry grizzly bears, the ability to shoot 30 high-velocity bullets in 10 seconds might be very helpful. Though actually, only one of those things is not make-believe.
Well, zombies aren't real. Though there is a theory that people treated with a mixture of pufferfish venom and Jimson weed would be placed in a zombie-like state, if the two highly toxic chemicals didn't kill them first. Bears and gangs are both real. And dangerous. Bears aren't that dangerous, there are only a few fatal bear attacks, but gangs represent the bulk of violent crime in America.
You could certainly repel any home invasion with an AR-15, undeniably.
Oh, well that sounds reasonable.
If you're properly trained, and sober, unimpaired, and don't mind shooting one of your kids once in a while by accident.
I believe only Massachusetts requires any sort of training before you buy a rifle. So virtually no states require training before you buy a rifle. And so where do we hear about all these household accidents with assault weapons? Hell, accidental firearm death of any kind is at a statistical noise level. So not that many kids are getting shot by drunk daddy with his AR-15.
Or them shooting each other when they play with daddy's new undeniably cool gun.
Again, accidental firearms death is exceedingly rare in the United States. Still, there have been accidental shootings with guns. Generally handguns, not long guns, and most of these have been loaded guns left in areas accessible by small children. Okay, you want training? I'll give you your training right here. If there are kids or visitors in your house, lock your guns up. Trigger lock, safe, hell, just put a padlock on a bedroom door. Done. And really, I'm truly preaching to the choir, as the number of these accidents are amazingly small. But you don't want to be the person who it happens to, and the solution is really easy. Also, teach your kids to shoot. As soon as they're old enough to be safe at the range, teach them to be safe and respectful of a firearm. Let them safely handle guns at home, unloaded, and fully supervised. Like I said at the start, new shooters experience adrenaline rushes from shooting, but seasoned shooters don't because they're just simply tools. Don't let guns attain any mystical qualities in the eyes of your children.
If you really feel you need a machine gun for this, you certainly wouldn't mind going through a little safety training, being properly licensed, and having your gun registered to a national database in case it fell into the wrong hands, would you?
If you've done nothing wrong, you've got nothing to hide. Well, first up, he's back to the dirty tricks. We aren't talking machine guns here, just rifles. Also, all of his suggestions are worthless and a waste of time, money, and resources, both to the gun owner and to the government that would need to support this insanity. We don't mandate safety training, and the numbers don't lie. Americans are very safe with their guns. Licensing accomplishes nothing, with the exception of a few states we don't license rifles. We do license carry, and several states have come to their senses and stopped bothering with that fool's errand. And violent crime has been dropping. And registration is even more worthless than licensing, as it's never used to solve crimes. Several states and the nation of Canada have all dissolved their registries because they were expensive and accomplished nothing. So no, I won't waste my time, money, and the money of taxpaying citizens to submit to your bad faith arguments.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's W-E-E-R-D world.com.
Plug of the week. The Topoco, or I don't know what the heck, 25-ounce stainless steel vacuum insulated water bottle. Aaron, I know it's not, you know, I'm not supposed to ask a lady her age, but do you remember back in the dark ages of thermoses where when you looked at a thermos wrong, it broke?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were glass lined and they were very easy to break.
And then they came up with these durable ones that you could put in kitty lunch pails and they worked oh so well, didn't they?
Yeah, for certain values of well.
Yeah, you put a little soup in there because you're going to have your little hot soup for lunch. And by the time you got it to lunch, it was lukewarm at best. That stuff was awful. And then Dad, tired of buying a new thermos for his coffee every time he broke the stupid thing by looking at it wrong or knocking it over, went and bought one of them Coleman thermoses that was now made of metal. And, you know, if it didn't keep your coffee hot, you could certainly use it as a personal defense weapon against a mob. If you could carry it. So the wife, about a week and a half ago, she decides, I want to get myself a little metal water bottle. I don't actually think she was intending to get a thermos. I think she just wanted a metal water bottle. She accidentally ended up with this 25-ounce stainless steel vacuum insulated water bottle by Topoko, whatever that is. And she poured boiling whatever it was that she was drinking, it was just below boiling, poured it in there, and she went off to do her thing. At noon, like, she goes over to this farm she's farm sitting at and forgets the thing sitting on the porch. 9 hours later, when she goes back to do the evening chores at the farm, she finds it on the porch, right? It's been no higher than mid-50s all day. It's in the 40s when she finds this thing. It's still too hot to drink 9 hours later.
Wow.
Bear in mind, this thing is double-walled stainless steel is all it is. It's light. It's 25 ounces. It sort of kind of fits in the center console of your car. Kind of tall. How much would you pay for something like that? Yeah, you're probably a bad choice. You're kind of cheap.
Yeah, I am cheap. So I'll just mentally add some to it. I don't know, $25?
What if I told you it would only be $14 for something that can hold liquid too hot to drink for 9 hours?
Wow.
Would that be worth some money to you?
I would certainly be impressed, and I would recommend it to some of my prepper friends, because some of them work on farms as well, and they're up north in Ohio.
So, important pro tip when you're using this thing, don't pour it in any hotter than you're willing to drink it, because it's not going to cool down for you. But yeah, I liked it enough that I went and bought myself one. They do have a purple. The problem is the purple is lavender, so I wasn't buying that. Ugh. I got the gray one. $14 It holds 25 ounces of liquid, and literally 9 hours later, the water was still too hot to drink. Whatever it was she had in there, hot tea or something, coffee, I don't know. But 9 hours later, sitting outside in the shade, it never got above 55 degrees that day, and it was still too hot to drink. So check it out. There's a link in the show notes. $14. I think it's worth it. In fact, I know it's worth it. I bought one.
Sounds like a good stocking stuffer gift.
Might be, actually. Quick reminder, join GBVC Radio Group on Facebook and let us know what you thought of the show. Well, that's our show for the week. Remember that Gunblog Variety Cast Radio is a member of the Self-Defense Radio Network.
Find the show notes at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode172.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast. Music courtesy of Rob Allen at blog.roballen.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. This podcast is made possible by the Firearms Policy Coalition and by contributions from listeners like you. This is a URS production.